The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. Thank you for listening to Audio Journal.
You are listening to the In Perspective weekly podcast with Bob Branco and Peter O'Toole.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Annie Chipetta. I'm filling in for Bob Branco, and this is the In Perspective podcast. This is episode 475 for July 31st, 2026. I'd like to thank everybody who has been listening to Bob's shows and has been helping in distributing them. I'd like to thank our producer, Raymond Gay, and of course, Herbie, who is at the helm with our hosting today. And of course, thank ACB Media for helping us out with these shows as well. And all our other media outlets. And a special thanks to Jacqueline Sylvia from JS Web Solutions. She's the one that helps Bob get these podcasts up on his podcast page, and his website is brancoevents.com. So I think I'm done with my preamble here. I'm here to introduce, an author. Her name is Andrea Kilmore Mann, and she's the author of Bending the Blues in Cincinnati, copyright 2026. So, Andrea, you have the floor. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you. I'm really, really happy to be part of this. I'm very excited to talk about my book.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. Throw in whatever you'd like. We're all ears, and we're happy to hear what you have to say.
Okay. Well, I'm a retired speech-language pathologist. My caseload mainly consisted of children with anything from an articulation problem to a swallowing disorder and everything in between, including autism, cerebral palsy, deaf, hard of hearing. It was a long career, so I saw a lot of things, and I enjoyed my career very, very much. And after I retired, I thought, it would be fun to write something other than speech-language initial evaluation reports. So I jumped into creative writing instead.
Wow, that's what a switch going from technical writing, but so how did you do that? Were you always kind of tinkering in the creative writing thing while you were doing your reporting and your case notes, or was it a big shift for you?
No, it wasn't a big shift. In fact, back in the day before we had everything online, when I was writing my reports, I wanted to stick in there the essence of these kids I was working with. You know, it wouldn't have been appropriate. No one would have really wanted to read it, but I found myself wanting to say things like, so-and-so has a delightful personality. There's a sparkle in her eye, blah, blah, blah. And I really had to stop myself from, just keeping to the facts. So making the switch from technical writing, report writing to fiction, it wasn't really that hard for me. So the first thing I did after I retired was I joined a writing group in Longmont, Colorado, where I live. And, came together we're still together 5 years later. It's kind of
wonderful.
A neglected group. Yeah. So we don't critique each other's work. We're more of a support group. It's almost like an AA meeting. I might go and say, hi, my name's Andrea. I haven't written in 4 days, and I'll get a lot of encouragement, that sort of thing. But that group, encouraged me to write some magazine articles about some things I was interested in. So I did, and they were accepted. And so that just gave me the momentum to keep on going. And then another one of my friends said, you should enter this contest in Reader's Digest. Writer's Digest, excuse me. So I did. I wrote a piece, and I was the most surprised of all, but out of 3,000 entries in 30 countries, I came in second. So I thought,
wonderful.
Huh, maybe I really can do this.
Maybe there's something to this writing thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you recall the title of your piece?
Okay. Yeah. The piece I wrote for Writer's Digest was called Rainbow's Lament. And it was a story about how the rainbow felt it wasn't really all that important, not like the wind and the sun and the rain.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
So how long did that actually, like, that bubble of last before you got down to the, you know, to the real work of fiction writing?
I think about a year, because after that I decided I didn't know what I was doing on really. You know, I had never taken a creative writing class, so I thought I probably need to get the basics. So I enrolled in a creative writing class at a community college here, had a wonderful, wonderful instructor by the name of Patrick Kelling, and he just kept giving me more and more encouragement. So he said, and my husband said, I think you should write a novel. And I said to both of them, everybody and their sister thinks they can write a novel.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to do this. But then I started thinking about the catalyst for the whole thing, for Bending the Blues in Cincinnati, was it was a time in my life when cancer had taken a lot of my family and a lot of my dear, dear friends. And, you know, we all reach a certain age where that begins to happen. We start losing people that we care about. But this just seemed like too much all at once. I mean, just so, so many people. I was pretty angry about that. And so I thought, I need to channel this somehow. So that's how the book started. It started out as a story about an oncology nurse treating her terminally ill patients, and it just took off from there.
Wow. First of all, my condolences. Cancer is a terrible, ugly, decimating thing, and I know what it's like too. So I'm sure there are a lot of listeners out here that can say, yep.
I'm sure
got
we all
hand
can.
Raised in that one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we talked a little bit about where the idea for this book came about. We just went through that. So, how long did it take to actually write the first draft? And did you have any pauses, starts and stops? Did you put it down and say, I'm not coming back for now?
All of the above.
Okay. So you're a writer then. Yay.
It actually, I hate to say it because I'm sure it's beginner's luck. But it came together pretty quickly. I think it took me just a little over a year. These other characters in the book, besides the protagonist, whose name is Stan, her real name is Constance, but she goes by Stan. These other characters just started showing up every morning when I would walk my dog. Who hopefully won't start barking here in a minute. These characters would just sort of form. It just sounds a little schizophrenic, but and they wanted to be in this story. So I would kind of play around with certain scenarios, certain points of view, and it took off from there. So one morning there's a character named Jake. One morning I might be focused on him, and then the next morning I might be focused back on Stan. And it just went flip-flop, and then these other characters started appearing, and I had a bunch of notes in a notebook trying to organize them all, which if you could see that notebook, it's an absolute mess. But eventually it all came together.
That's wonderful, because that's I think that messiness eventually making something beautiful and, you know, finishing it out in an actual published book. That's the beauty of the creative process. It's not always neat and clean. It's messy. It's fun and it's frustrating sometimes, but it works. I don't know. Somehow it all comes together and you're like, wow. How did I do that?
Exactly. How did that happen? And I mentioned the writing group that I belong to in Longmont, and I'm clearly the oldest person in this group. There's a whole range of ages, but most are, I would say, in their, you know, early 30s to mid 40s. And I'm not. And these kids, I call them the kids, but they were always giving me, saying, have you tried this writing program? Have you tried that? Have you tried to organize it this way? And they'd show me their screens and how they're, you know, one character's over here in a file and another one's over there in a file. And I just held up my notebook that's all tattered and it's got, you know, all these stickies everywhere. I said, this is my organizing. This is how I organize. I don't think I can change. But, yeah, it all came together.
Well, that's wonderful. Speaking of your characters, I have a question about one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So where did you get the idea for Gloria's cataloging Stan's scrubs? I'm really curious about that one.
You know, I wish I had a good answer for that, but it was just one of those things. One day I was walking my dog, and I looked down at my – Crocs and said, gosh, you know, I got a whole bunch of different Crocs. And then you go to your annual physical or you go get a blood draw and everybody's wearing Crocs. So I thought, I can probably work this in somehow. So there wasn't any aha moment other than me looking at my Crocs and then probably having to go to get a blood draw.
All right. Cause that to me set Gloria's personality for me. Immediately.
Yeah.
It was just something really short and sweet and so personable about her. I was like, oh, that's really cool. And I remembered that.
That's great. Yeah. I wanted her to have some kind of something to do while she was sitting there, you know, other than the lady across from her who's crocheting or doing a crossword puzzle or, you know, something maybe a little different.
So I always ask this question. I guess I'll ask it on early on. So how much of you is in this book?
the part about losing people to cancer is very much me. And all those feelings that the other characters are feeling when Gloria's going through this. And the end of life situations and trying to make that decision. Those are all things that probably a lot of us have mulled over in our minds. Mm-hmm. And the blues music also. I'm not a musician. I just love music, especially blues music. I did, however, take an online harmonica class for several months just so
wonderful.
Just so I could
understand
it better.
Yeah.
And Matt Kleeb, he was the harmonic instructor. I wrote to him a few times and said, okay, help me understand this elusive blue note. Help me get this right. And he was great at explaining all of that. And I have to say the harmonica lessons were really fun. And, I can play a few songs.
All right. Yeah. Explaining that the bend, like what you were just speaking about, like what that is and how it transpired in Stan's life. I thought that was another wonderful, accentuation on her personality and her growth and just her as a person, really brought that home to me. Really intensified, from maybe a two to a three dimensional person. Mm-hmm. So that was wonderful.
She has, go ahead.
So she, the speech pathology and being in the helping field, how much did you put into Stan, in terms of your experience and?
Well, I never thought of it until you just asked that question, Annie, but, I think a lot because the type of work I did, I was in private practice for a long time, And I was in people's homes and watching how their child developed language, seeing what their struggles were as a family, especially if this child had a lot of difficult health problems. Mm-hmm. And you see what these families are going through, and you want to give them 120% of what you have, because they've been thrown such a curveball to begin with that you want to be more than just the speech pathologist if that's what they need. And some days there were times when I would just sit and listen to a mom who was ready to, you know, climb a tree.
Right.
Or their baby's crying all morning long. And so, you know, therapy goes out the window. You're just you're managing things then. And I think, so now that I think about it, I wanted Stan to be as caring as she possibly could be without overstepping a professional boundary.
Yes.
And I think that's why sometimes she was so compartmentalized as far as, this is my professional life. This is mm-hmm. what I do during the day, being an oncology nurse. This is my my other life, being a blues musician. And she didn't want those paths to cross or that area to become gray. And it did, but it wasn't anything she had wanted to have happen.
Oh, thank you for explaining that. I mean, to me, she did cross those boundaries, but in she was in control of why and to what level,
mm-hmm.
and she had to really think about that for a while. I think that just reflects on life and in big decisions in our lives, and that really came through in her personality. And in maybe it's one of the underlying themes of the book that came through for me. I'm a therapist by trade as well.
Oh!
So I'm, you know, I dialed into all that relational human condition, people-centered type of stuff.
What kind of therapy do you do?
I was a family therapist and a trauma counselor for the VA.
Oh, you've seen it. You've seen it all then. Yeah.
Oh, that's why this book is just so wonderful. I mean, it just spoke to me in so many ways. So I'm going to jump to one more character, and then maybe we'll go into an excerpt, if that's okay.
Sure.
I wanted to talk about Rachel. Because my experience as a reader with Rachel really grew. Like, at first, she was a pivotal negative character for me. I did not like her at all. I was just like, could she just, you know, just figure herself out first,
yeah.
You know.
Get on
then,
board here.
Yeah, right. But then at the end, she surprised me, and it was really an excellent, surprising, conclusion for me. I won't say anything more because I don't want to spoil anything, but I just wanted you to know that at first I was like, Rachel, like, go away.
Yeah. I didn't like her very much either.
But you did a great job at then making it like people not like her in the book. Just wanted to say that. And it's hard to write a believable pivotal character without being on the nose about it. So that was really great. Anyway.
Well, thank you for that.
You're welcome. Yeah. Do you want to get into an excerpt and then maybe.
Sure. Yeah.
Go into some other stuff.
Yeah, I can do that.
Excellent.
So I chose a passage. I'll just set this up. So this is a scene where Stan, and again, her real name's Constance. But she's just finished up her first set of music at the Baptist Blues Music Club. This is where she plays every Sunday night. This is her alter ego. And two of her one of her patients has shown up, and the husband of another patient. So it's Dwayne and Jake. And Dwayne's wife, Gloria, is currently going through chemo in one of Stan's chairs, and Jake, the other character, has just finished up his weeks of chemotherapy, and he's falling in love with Stan, but is very, very reluctant to act on it. So this is chapter 21. Holy hell, that was some performance. I'm stunned, Are you sure you don't want to quit your day job? This seems like a lot more fun. Thanks, Dwayne, Stan says with a smile as she sits down in the chair he offers her. Jake said you might be here tonight. The band has just finished its first set. She scans the room, noting that most faces in the crowd are familiar. It seems like a typical Sunday night, with the exception of Dwayne and Jake. She's never knowingly had patience in her audience. She's mildly uncomfortable, but determined to push through it. A server hands Jake his second celebratory beer. Dwayne is still nursing a whiskey and water from the first set. Where did you learn to play like that? Dwayne asks. From my pop-pop, my grandfather, she explains. He loved the blues music, especially the classic stuff. I was a blues nerd as a kid. No one understood. That earns a chuckle, and she excuses herself to make the rounds and chat with the guests. She sticks to the tables, never venturing to the bar. The people sitting there, mostly men, seldom seem engaged in the music. They face away from the stage, hunched over their drinks, never staying for very long. Just before the second set, Dwayne downs the remainder of his drink, slaps Jake on the back and says he needs to get home to Gloria. Ask her out. You're not a patient anymore, he says. Dwayne catches Stan's eye and gives her a salute, then gathers his jacket and car keys. Jake watches as the server sets the glass of club soda with three lime slices on the piano. Back on stage, the band eases into an old Memphis Slim tune, Every Day I Have the Blues. Jake puts his feet up on the now empty chair next to him and lets the music seep in, its soulful, flatted notes, the rhythmic melisma, the bending of the harmonica wash over him. All too soon, Marv is thanking the crowd, and the band wraps up another Sunday night with the familiar Cincinnati blues. Jake feels he should leave before Stan has packed up her backpack, but he doesn't move. He looks around the room and sees that about half of the crowd is still seated, finishing up conversations and drinks. This makes him feel less conspicuous. Besides, he reasons, he has hardly touched his second beer. He wishes there were someone near him that he could talk to, or near him to talk with. That would buy him some time. He takes a sip of beer, checks the weather on his phone, and slowly eases into his coat. As he's catching the zipper, he sees from the corner of his eye that Stan is stepping off the stage. He pretends to be fishing for something in his pocket, anything to stall for a little more time. He has no idea what he will say to her. She breezes past him on her way to the coat closet, with Marv and the rest of the band close behind. After retrieving her coat, she turns toward Jake's table and calls, Nice to see you. Enjoy your freedom. She pulls her scarf out of her coat pocket and doesn't notice the gloves that have fallen to the floor. Jake sees it all and is quick to salvage them after she's out the door.
Thank you. That was wonderful reading.
Of course. Thank you.
So are you going to narrate your own audiobook?
Well, a friend of mine and I are talking about that.
Excellent.
Yes, because I know that, you know, the technology is out there where you can have it read to you. But from what I understand, the quality isn't that great. And I know AI can do it, but that to me seems like you're taking a job away from someone whose craft that is.
Yeah, and we can have a whole conversation about that.
Yeah. And yet for me, you know, for a debut author, I don't really, you know, I don't even have an agent. I have an awesome, awesome editor, Lenore Dworkin, and her husband, David, but I don't have an agent to, you know, help me navigate those kinds of things, nor do I have that kind of resources with, you know, on my first book to hire a professional reader. So a friend of mine and I are considering that at the encouragement of Lenore.
Yes. I can tell you, it's I think it, go for it, for sure. Cause the authenticity, of an author reading his or her book, even with, you know, other, you know, maybe another author, you know, making, being the male, and you being the female characters, that's really a hot thing now. So I'll just give you an FYI. And it's fun. It really is fun. And, I've done some of my, I've read some of my books, parts of some of my books, and it's really nice to know to get your, not just have your byline, as the author, but also when it goes up on ACX or, when it goes up on Audible, you get noted that, you know, you're also, you know, a co-narrator, and it's fun, you know, it's, I don't know. Anyway,
well,
so I would encourage that, and
thank you for that encouragement. Thank you.
A lot of people listening tonight, that's how we read. We read audiobooks. That's our, you know, so it's in, you know, and it's also nice to know that the industry itself, has sped up the process from print to audio in a measurable way in the last 5 years or so. And it could be because of AI, but I don't think so. I just think that people are consuming books in a more open way, in different formats. And, you know, it's, oh, there's Bob. So it's great to know that you're considering that, and I would urge you to do it, if you can.
Thank you. I will even consider it more now.
Okay. So talk a little bit more about the publishing biz. You're obviously an independent author. Did you shop your book out or not?
I did. I queried, I think I put out about 30 queries.
Yeah.
And, I really didn't expect to get a bite. I got a little bit of feedback, and the feedback I got was, there's a lot to like here, but it's not long enough. My book is, I think it's 63,000 words. And the sweet spot for commercial sales is between 70, and 120,000 words. So I fell short of that mark. But I, you know, I know, but, I got another suggestion. Well, just put some more stuff in there, but I started going through it and I'm thinking, no, it would all be fluff. And I've read books where I suspect that there was fluff in there to get to the 70,000. Maybe that's sour grapes on my part. But I thought, nope, this is what I want to say. It's done. I don't want to just stick stuff in there for the sake of a word count. So that's when one of my ex-neighbors, she published a children's book, and we were talking one day, and she said, oh, I've got just the editor for you. I know how you can publish this book. So she gave me the information, DLD Books, Lenore and David Dvorkin, and I contacted Lenore, and she read the book, and she said, and she was an awesome editor, just amazing. I learned so much from her. And she said, yeah, we can do this. Let's do this. So it's sort of a hybrid. I don't have the bandwidth to do this myself.
Right.
And I don't have an agent, but I do have Lenore and David.
That's excellent. I use them too, and I have 6 books that they help me with.
Wonderful.
And so my personal story is I started out in 2016, and I couldn't find anybody to help me. And then I read another author's book, and she mentioned them, and there was an email address, and I said, okay, and I emailed, and Lenore got back to me right away, and the rest is history.
So hi, everyone. I'm
hey,
here
Bob.
Now, Bob.
Hi, Bob.
Hello, Bob.
I hear you mention Lenore and David. They are my editors as well. I've written some books, and they are fabulous at what they do.
I totally agree with that.
I agree. Yes.
Hi, Andrea. Congratulations on your book.
Thank you, and thanks for having me on your podcast.
That's quite all right. I just arrived, so I don't know yet if you told everybody how we can find your book.
No, we haven't done that yet. There are a couple different ways you can find it. Probably the easiest way is to go to dldbooks.com/AndreaMann/. But you can also find it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple, wherever books are sold.
Very good. Very good. Mm-hmm. And I heard you mention something about 70,000 words.
Yes. Hmm. Yes.
I don't hear too many authors counting the words. That's very impressive.
Well, I tend to have word envy, word count envy.
Oh, yes. Yes. I know what
yeah.
you mean.
Yeah. So I think, Lenore, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this is 63,000.
Oh, I don't remember the word count. Of course I have the page number.
Yeah, yeah.
From the book. It's not a very long book, but neither is it overly short. I mean, it's certainly not what would be called a novella. It's definitely a novel. Mm. And personally, as an editor, I have to say, I like books of that length. You know, to me, the 250, 300 page book is just fine. And I don't know, I don't really care to read many books that are like 500, 600 pages long. And so I just thought it was a terrific length and definitely not padded with fluff. And I just want to tell everybody, I mean, I really and truly, this is one of the very best books I have ever read in my whole life. I was just blown away by it. I just think it's fabulous. I praise it to the skies to everybody. It was such a treat to work on editing it. And you are such an agreeable client, Andrea, and really just a super pleasure to read it, to edit it, and I'm praising it to the skies to everybody. And I think you're doing fabulously with your marketing. I mean, the fact that you've had two book signing events already, I just think that's great. That's most unusual. And, I think you're doing a wonderful job with the self-marketing. That really, I mean, every self-published author agrees that is by far the hardest part.
Oh, yes.
And yes.
And you are doing so well with it.
Oh, so, thank you. I appreciate that.
Hardly wait for your next book. And I know you're working on, how's the second book coming? Are you coming along with it?
It's about halfway finished. Anna, you're an author. I know there's lots of authors probably here today, but for me, in the summer, I tend to slow down because there are just so many other things to do. I love to sail. I love to hike. You know, I can sit and write on a rainy October morning, but right now it's July, so I tend to think more about my story during the summer and actually get back to the writing when the weather's not so good.
Yeah, I agree with that totally. Yeah, the winter is for writing for me. I'm definitely dialed in then. But I have one question. I'm curious to know what the cover of your book looks like. Could you describe it to us?
I certainly can.
Excellent.
So it is it in the background is actually the Cincinnati skyline, and then there are musical notes. There's a blue sky with Cincinnati skyline in the background. There are musical notes wafting over the blue sky. Mm-hmm. And in the foreground is an old abandoned park bench with two birds sitting on the back of the bench in an overgrown park. That is the park that's featured in the book. And my daughter's best friend is a graphic artist. Her name's Nicole Swilpa. Shout out to her. And I was hesitant to ask her whether she would design a book cover for me. She was also one of my beta readers, so I didn't want to ask too much of her.
Yeah, okay.
But my daughter encouraged me to go ahead and ask, and I emailed Nicole and said, hey, would you be willing to collaborate with me on a book cover? And I probably hit send and 3 seconds later got a response. Yes, yes, 1,000 times yes, I thought you'd never ask.
So, very sweet.
Yeah. And so she, this was one of five, this, the cover that we chose was one of five that she put together, and I think she nailed it, which I think is great because she read the book. This was her vision. It was my vision, and I think it works pretty well.
That's wonderful. I think, you know, other independent authors, I probably go through these growing pains with the book cover. It's very rare that you get it right the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And you go through iterations and ideas, and it's just, but it's so important to get the cover right.
Well, yeah, the cover
sounds like that one is awesome.
I like it.
Yeah.
May I say something here about the cover?
Sure.
Yeah, I love the cover, and I felt that Nicole got all the most important elements in it. It's really well put together. With the Cincinnati skyline. Of course, I've never been to Cincinnati, so I had no idea what the skyline looked like, but it's very attractive and unusual. And then with the musical notes drifting across the sky was a very interesting touch. They're very subtle. They're not real. It's not a real strong, deep color. You have to almost kind of look to see them, but they are there. And then the park bench in the front and with the birds and everything, because those elements are very important in the book. The park, and the effect it has on people is the only, mildly paranormal element. If you want to, it's so mild though, I really wouldn't call it a paranormal novel, you know, by any means. But it's a very interesting addition to the book. And I thought Nicole just did a wonderful job. And then on the back, we have a small that shows like big, like iron gates that are opening to what looks like a kind of decrepit park. And actually Nicole and Andrea and I discussed whether, you know, which one to use for the cover. And I thought using the picture with the gates would maybe make it look like what it wasn't, you know, as the whole book. I felt that the other one was far for the main cover. And then the little image on the back is a nice addition. But she's terrific, and I will definitely approach her if we need something like, usually our cover images are from Shutterstock or Annie, like in your case, you have wonderful photographs from your sister. And, you know, so we'll use photographs that people send us or Shutterstock images or something else. But I think Nicole did a great job.
Agree. Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
So we're gonna open to questions, right, Bob?
Sure. Trish, are you there?
It's Herbie today.
Oh, it's Herbie. Hi, Herbie. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I want to thank you for being our host for today's program, and I also want to thank our media and, of course, Raymond Gay, our producer, and Jacqueline Sylvia, our web designer, for what they do. Got to give them a shout-out.
So we are still in Convention Stream today, so we are not on ACB Media. We are on Clubhouse, and Media Stream should return. I'm imagining it'll be back by Monday, but I'm not completely sure, so... we're still on Convention Stream today.
All right.
But we do have some raised hands, if you are ready.
Sure, go right ahead.
All right, first one is going to be Leonore.
Yes, my hand has been up there for a while. I didn't really mean to have it up, but I just did want to repeat the URL. All you need to enter to get to her DLD Books website, which has full information and buying links and everything, is www.dldbooks.com, and you can put the /, if you want, and you'll get right to it, or her name, enter her name in for Amazon Books. And by the way, her first name, Andrea, is Andrea, the usual spelling, but the last name is Mann. It's got two N's. That's the German spelling for Mann. And so be sure to put that name, Andrea Mann, with Mann. And you can easily get to it. Andrea, I think there's another Andrea Mann, or however she pronounces it, who is an author. So it is good to put, if you're going just to Amazon, it's good to put the middle name, which is Kilmer.
Yes.
Andrea Kilmer Mann, K-I-L-M-E-R, just as it sounds. But either way, you can easily get to the book. And, of course, the title, too, Bending the Blues in Cincinnati, which is, you know, an unusual title, surely. You're not going to have duplicates on that title. So easy to find. And so I just wanted to emphasize that. Very reasonably priced. It's in hardcover, paperback, and ebook format.
Thanks, Lenore. You should be my agent.
Well, thank you.
We are sort of
agents for people. We try, but we certainly have no interest in officially being agents. So thank you, though.
All right, Herbie, what do we have next?
Next, we have Deanna.
Deanna, yes, welcome.
Hi, Andrea. A lot of this kind of resonates with me because my background was psychology, and I have always had a lot of empathy, sometimes too much. I tried my hand at social work and discovered I wasn't tough enough. I wanted to bring all the foster kids home. I wanted to adopt all the elderly people with no relatives. I wanted to, it was tearing me up.
Mm-hmm.
So instead I joined the Peace Corps and did 2.5 years building a blind school in Samoa. But I've been writing since I was a child, mostly because when you're Native American and living in poverty as a kid, you don't have much to entertain yourself with but your family and friends. And so I was a storyteller from childhood. I'd make up things for my brothers. I'm pretty sure we didn't have a television until the early 50s, and I lost my vision before I really got captured by the boob tube syndrome. My vision was declining at that time anyway. So, and your writing technique is very similar to mine. I have to have an idea first, and then you jump in. And so it's a kind of cancer stuff because you really don't have an outline and you're not building it. It just writes itself, sort of, and then you figure out, okay, this goes in, that goes out. I will get the Kindle version on electronic version because I can have my darned Echo device read it to me then. And
excellent.
She does a pretty decent job. But it is not safe. There are some audiobooks up on Audible that are read by authors, and that'll give you a little bit. The one I read most recently was Judge Stone, and the actress that reads it collaborated with James Patterson to write it.
Oh.
And you get the rhythm and the feel of it, because Judge Stone is an African-American judge in the South. And you get the feel of that, the cultural nuance come out. And I'm sensitive to those being Native American. If you get that one and listen to it, you'll see that the passion and the rhythm brings you right into the story in a way that a paid, unless you've got somebody that's a super professional that can really handle a variety of material, it does make a difference. So that was my suggestion for you there. My picture on your screen is actually the cover of my first book, which was 50 years of writing, which 50 years of walking with friends, and it. Something I wrote for my mother because of COVID. And I wrote it because I couldn't see her. She was turning 90. I live in the middle of Missouri. She lived in Palm Desert, California. It was not a safe time to fly. My husband has several pre-existing conditions, and I had a new great-grandchild living only 18 miles from me that I couldn't see because of COVID. You know, so I was in a horribly depressed mood, and I'm mostly an upbeat person, but sometimes life just keeps kicking you in the teeth, and you're going, what is this? You know, what have I done karmically to deserve all of this at one time?
Yeah.
And so I was sitting in my bed, just having a quiet meltdown, because I didn't want to carry it out of my room because I care for my husband, who has a neurologic condition that's slowly taking him. And so I was really not handling it well that day. But I didn't want him to see it because he feels really badly that I'm his caregiver. He decided I'm not, but he never made my disability seem a burden to him. And I didn't want to let him eat himself up about it. So I said, okay, what can you do about Mama's birthday? And I thought, she's always been my biggest fan as a writer. I've got this book. I've been trying to put together packages to shop around to university presses that have veterinary schools and have psychology departments, because I was thinking they might like to publish it because it talks about the human-animal bond and what a difference it makes to the visually impaired to have guide dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I contacted the Leonore, and I said, can you do it? And I sent it to her around Thanksgiving. She wrote back right away and said, we can do it by your mom's birthday in February. And David and Leonore put my book up on January 6th, and my brother was able to, I mailed him a copy of it in print, and he was able to walk it over to my mom's house and give it to her on her birthday.
So that's a great story.
So yeah. That's why Leonore is a special person to me, too.
Absolutely. And, Deanna, we need more people in the world like you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Deanna.
Thanks.
All right. Brandon.
Audio on mute.
Hello.
Hello, Brandon. Yes.
What's up, Bob?
And lowered alert.
Hi. Okay. I have a couple questions. Actually, is the book going to be in libraries? Like, for those who subscribe to library services, and the other one, is this an audiobook or an ebook?
Well, it's in some libraries, I know that, and it's ebook, not audio yet.
Oh, okay.
So, Andrea, this is Annie. I think what he's referring to is the National Library Service. Books mm-hmm. for people with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
It's called, we know it as BARD. It's an acronym for, I forget what, but that's what, cause we always look for books to be recorded through the National Library Service and then released out mm-hmm. that way. That's an accessible way because we can get them in Braille or in recorded book format. So,
well, I'll certainly look into that.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, if you're on a conversation off this, I can help you out. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Brandon.
You, Brandon. Welcome. Okay. Herbie, who's next?
We currently don't have any hands, and we have 11 minutes left.
All right. If we do have a hand, just feel free to interrupt us.
So, Andrea, this is Annie. Deanna, was talking about being a planner or a pantser or a planter. So how would you describe yourself?
In between. I'm a planter. Yeah. So I didn't write an outline. As you mentioned before, Annie, with some of your books, they tend to write themselves. So I knew where I wanted to go with this story. You just get lost in the weeds sometimes on how you get there. So it was kind of an adventure. Some days I would just delete an entire chapter and then rework it or stick it someplace else. And, you know, as I mentioned before, all my stickies, I would rearrange the stickies, but I never had a real clear cut, outline as to this is where the story arc is. This is the, inciting incident, you know, 30% in, this is going to happen. And my dialogue is 40% of the book. Never anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm pleased to hear that because as much prep, part of me wants to be, you know, a prepper, but then the other part of me says, no. We can do this instead.
Yeah, sometimes those characters really do have minds of their own, and they'll let you know. But I did want to mention, and Lenore and I have had this discussion a few times, my POVs, my points of view, I tend to tell the story from various points of view rather than just one or two characters, and I have been criticized for that by some critiques for but I feel and maybe I'm being defensive, but you know, in classic fiction writing they'll caution you against that,
right? Yes.
But I didn't want my readers experiencing these characters from just a few points of view. You know, the show and tell adage, it's very useful, and I do trust my readers to recognize how someone's feeling through their actions. But at other times, I wanted my readers to be right there inside that character's head, right along with them. So my point of view does change sometimes within the same chapter. It'll be coming at the reader from two or three different points of view.
Yeah, I thought that was a great creative way to structure your book. And I've played around with that as well. And, you know, there are times when, you know, you've got, you know the rules and you know when to bend them. And you did that very well. And, you know, I picked up on that right away because two of my books are similar to that. And, you know, it's time that we, you know, convention is great, but, you know, being able to be creative and explore what it means, you know, to be a writer and to give people meaning, you know, you did it so wonderfully. And I hope you keep going. And that reminds me, what's next for you?
I'm in the middle of another magical realism, and it's magical realism light. It's not, you know, there's just a light element that goes through it. But this one is about a river spirit. She lives on the Green River in Utah, and she's been there from the beginning of time, and she is now falling in love with a river guide, and she's ephemeral. You can't see her. And the river guide is very much a human. And so it's a little complicated. At this point in my book, the river guide doesn't know she exists yet, but he senses something. And it's his struggle through finding out who he is. He's got some baggage. And it's her struggle being there from the beginning of time and trying to figure out what her purpose is. Why is she there?
Wonderful. Well,
so, yeah,
I'm reading it.
I'm having fun with it. I really am.
Yeah. Well, it sounds wonderful.
That does sound wonderful.
Yeah. So who do you read? Who are your authors? Who are your go-tos?
Oh, gosh. I loved Zora Neale Hurston. I just love her stuff. I love the way she, her characters speak in the vernacular. She's just so good at turning a phrase. I love her metaphors. I have all her books because I've highlighted everything. Like, oh, I wish I had written that. I wish I could turn a phrase like that. So I love all of her stuff. There's another book. It's a current book. It's called Go as a River by Shelley Reed. She's an author out of Gunnison, Colorado. A real Cinderella story. It's her debut novel. And she wrote two queries, got one bit, so to speak. And now the book is, I think, in 30 different languages. And she just signed a deal for movie rights. But she turns a beautiful phrase. So she's my contemporary hero at the moment.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Any other hands?
This is Leonore again. Could I just make one comment about the
poem? Sure. Go ahead, because we have no other hands, and we've got 4 minutes.
Just real quickly, the multiple points of view, I think, were extremely well done. I enjoyed that very much, and that's just nonsense to say that a book should just have one point of view. And I think you did a masterful job of it, Andrea. So just don't listen to stupid criticism like that.
Yes, yes, ma'am.
it was wonderful. It really got you into each person, you know, and that person's thinking. I thought that was brilliant how you did it.
So I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, Bob.
All right, Herbie, you said there was one more hand.
I don't see one.
Herbie?
No, I was saying there was no hands, so she
couldn't. Oh, no hands, I'm sorry. Yeah. Well, you do tell a very good story, Andrea, and, you know, and as a fellow author, you know, we all work together to try to do what we can, you know, and you do a great job, and I'll keep up the good work is all I can say right now, and you know, whatever you do in the future, I'm sure it'll be just as successful.
Thank you. And I really appreciate being part of this podcast. It means a lot. Thank you very much.
When you get your next book released, we'll have you back on the show, and you can talk about that one, too.
I look forward to that. Thank you.
And you're welcome. And again, the website, if you want to buy Bending the Blues in Cincinnati, or learn more about Andrea as an author, you go to www.dldbooks.com/AndreaMann/, and that's MANN. And if you want to use the middle name, it's Kilmer, KILMER. Is that how you spell it, Andrea?
Yes.
Just to distinguish you from the other Andrea Mann. We wouldn't want anybody to be confused, of course.
But the Kilmer is not there on the DLD books.
Well, we know that.
Andrea Mann. But yes, if you go to Amazon, yes, directly to Amazon, you do need the Kilmer, Andrea Kilmer Mann. Yeah.
Right. When you go to Amazon, exactly.
Right.
Well, thank you, Andrea, again for making an appearance today. We appreciate you and your fine work. And Annie, thank you very much for filling in for me and Peter. You did a great job.
You're welcome. It was a lot of fun.
You know, and of course, I want to thank Leonore for her participation as well, and Herbie for being our facilitator for today's program. Peter, we miss you. We'll see you next week, and continue to have a good time at the convention. And I am Bob Ranko, and go safe with God's abundant blessings. Have a nice week, everyone.
You are listening to Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
People with disabilities adapt on a daily basis. They're people you want on your team. And at the Mass Commission for the Blind, we're here to help you find blind and visually impaired professionals to help you reach your organizational goals. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB to learn how you can become an employer partner for the blindness community. That's 1-800-392-6450. or visit mass.gov/MCB.
Listen to Audio Journal on your smart speaker. Just say, Alexa, play radio station Audio Journal on TuneIn. Or, hey Google, play radio station Audio Journal on TuneIn.